So we didn't talk about it before, but my eye is puffy.
Yeah, I see that. I was wondering, why do I notice it? You okay?
I'm fine, but I got concrete in my eye yesterday.
Oh, no.
That's not where concrete goes.
You're right. And I should have been wearing safety glasses. I know. I know. I was in a hurry, and I just forgot. And I was, like, mixing concrete, got it all mixed. I was putting it in this form for this thing I'm trying. And I was standing up, and I had, like, a big scoop of it. And I was just, like, plop. And one little drop shot straight out, and it didn't go everywhere. Just one drop shot straight up about 5 feet and hit me right in the eye.
Oof.
And I immediately stopped and, like, you know, closed my eye and, like, tried not to move anything and went in and flushed it out. And I got it all out. Like, it doesn't feel like there's anything in it. But in the minute or two that it was in there, it just started, like, kind of burning.
Burns.
And so it's all
skin,
red and puffy. And it's actually a lot better than it was yesterday. But it's very, like, I have multiple, like, lines across the bottom of my eyelid. It feels like I got punched, kind of. But
whoa.
I don't like
anyway.
It.
No, I don't like it either. So sorry that I look the way that I look. I mean, always, but especially today that I look the way that I
look. Do any antiseptic or anything?
No, I flushed it out underneath the sink really well. And then I had some, like, eye drops, you know, that are, like, contact, like, I don't know what you call it, but re-wetting drops, I think is what they're called. So I put a bunch of those, and then that forces you to, like, you know, all the stuff comes out and everything. And it's fine. It doesn't hurt anymore. It's just sore from me messing with it, you know, a whole bunch yesterday, and puffy. So I think I should be good.
And how was your project?
I just wrote down.
Oh, go ahead, Dave.
Based on what you said, Bob, I have a folder of notes in my, I had different categories in my notes. And one of those categories is art. And there's a list of phrases that I put in there that could potentially be signs someday. And based on what you said, I just wrote down, I was in a hurry. And I'm thinking, like, I was in a hurry. And then there's, like, a Band-Aid. I used Band-Aid.
Yeah.
So if that ever is made into something physical, that's all because of this moment right here.
Nice. Glad my eye could help out.
Yeah.
You know what's really stupid about it, though? Well, the whole thing's stupid, but it's stupid that I wasn't wearing safety glasses. Yes, I know. But past that, I was, okay, so a couple of days ago, I was doing this concrete casting thing for the first time. I've never worked with concrete. I don't know what I'm doing. I was like, I'm going to give it a shot, and I'm going to shoot for the moon. I'm going harder than I should go on this thing. I don't know if I showed you guys what I was working on beforehand or not, but so I took a big, big leap, and the next day I was, like, feeling the top of it, and I'm like, I don't think this is going to work. Like, I'm pretty sure this is not going to, like, I didn't mix it right. I tried, but I don't think I got it right, whatever. And I'm in a hurry. I'm under a deadline, whatever. And so I'm like, well, since I have to wait another 24 hours, I'm going to go ahead and make another one of these just as a backup, right? I've still got some concrete left over. Go get some more sand. I'm going to make up another mold real quick. So I just, like, made it, and I was mixing, and I dumped it in there, and it got in my eye, and then I had to go rinse out my eye, and then I came back, finished dumping it in there, and I didn't even have enough concrete. So I did all this work, this extra work, to try to make an extra thing. I got it in my eye, and I didn't even fill up the mold, which makes it completely useless. So it was a total waste of time, and my eye is puffy, and I wasted concrete, and I wasted the material for the mold. So I was in a hurry, and I just didn't plan ahead. I didn't measure, that type of stuff. So
I think when it comes to safety, sometimes there's perceived value, there's perceived danger, and obviously anything spark, spinning, rotation, flickable, that's scary. When we deal with water or liquids, we're like, that's not going to get my eye. Yeah. I think subconsciously.
What are the chances?
Yeah, I think that's subconsciously, because I think we all have that. We're all guilty of that.
Yeah. Well, and it's not something I've, like, I don't mix things like that often, and it didn't even occur to me to put safety glasses on. It's not that I thought about it and was like, nah, I'm fine.
That's what I'm saying. It's a subconscious thing. But if you were going to flip on a grinder or whatever, you'd make sure your eyes were covered some way,
right,
somehow.
Yeah.
You know, it's just an unconscious thing. It's a perceived danger.
Yeah. So that was a new experience for me, though, and it, I ended up taking off the mold. I'll tell you what I did. So I was trying to make this planner, and it's not a cube, but it's a box, right? And so it's four sides that get screwed together, and then there's a 5-gallon bucket down inside of it to create the void. And on the inside of these sides of this box, I laser cut a pattern that's like a, it's like a Japanese, I can't remember what you call that pattern. You made a thing out of it, David, recently.
Kumiko?
Yes. So it's that pattern. I laser cut a panel with that pattern on it, and I glued it to the, and nailed it to the inside of each one of these four sides, and then put the box together, and then filled it with concrete so that the concrete would go into the triangle parts of the, of that pattern on all four sides, knowing that that's a really complex pattern with very sharp sides. Like I even said in the video, I know this is not going to be a clean pull. I'm trying to create an old looking thing that's kind of broken.
Chipped edges, you know, and stuff is acceptable.
That's cool.
Yeah. Like that's the point. And so, but either way, it was a big swing, for first time ever doing this stuff. So when I mixed the first bit of concrete, I had play sand, which is really fine, kind of uniform, really thin sand, right? And so I mixed one bag with some Portland cement, and I mixed it up, and I put it in the thing, in the bottom of the thing, and it looked great. And it was nowhere close to enough. So I had to run to the store real quick, and I got more bags of sand. Different store, just grabbed sand. Get them home, put the bag in the tray with the Portland cement, cut the bag open, it falls out, not the same sand at all. Like, it's a bunch of different sizes of little tiny things. Cringe. It's just a very different kind of sand. So right there I knew, like, well, the bottom of my concrete and the top of my concrete in this one mold are going to be different.
Mm.
Okay, you know. But I went ahead and mixed it up. I had to do a second one of these, so I'm making two planners. And so I did all this, spent the whole day mixing concrete, packing it in this thing, hitting the sides, trying to get it to go into the patterns and everything. Then when I came back 24, not even 24 hours later, the next morning, I was feeling the top of it, and it was like I could take my finger and just like rub it apart. Like it wasn't hardening, you know, into a unique thing. It was like, it's like wet sand is what it felt like. You could just kind of scrape it off. I'm like, oh man, this is not going to work. Like I don't know what I did, but too much water, not enough concrete. I don't know. So that's when I went to the whole, you know, waste the afternoon and hurt my eye thing. So I did all that. And then, yesterday afternoon, I was like, you know what? If it doesn't work, I need to know because I'm in a hurry. So I'm going to go take off one of these panels and just see how bad it is. So unscrew the panel, pull it off, and it looks awesome. Like it looks exactly like I was expecting it to look. It's not complete. It broke off a lot of the things in the pattern. It rounded some of them over, you know, because it was like it's a laser cut two-dimensional pattern. So you have sharp edges, 90-degree corners on the bottom.
Yeah.
And so it rounded over a lot of the pieces that were left
over.
How
deep is the impression?
A quarter inch.
Oh, it's
deep.
Which
is also a lot. Yeah.
Wow, that's deep.
I really should have gone with eighth. I probably would have had a more, you know, like a better result, more uniform result. But I'll show you a picture of it. So I on camera, just went ahead and took one of these panels off. And I'm like, oh, that's not terrible. So let's just take them all off. And I took all four sides of both planners off, and they look pretty cool. Like it's kind of what I was going for. So now I'm letting it sit overnight. Here, this is, you can kind of see.
Oh.
Yeah. If you're watching the video, you get a preview of this thing. Yeah. Anyway, so cool. I still have to get the bucket out of the inside of it, which is proving to be a little more difficult than I expected. But, and I also have to get the base out from underneath it. So I'm definitely not done yet, but, it, you know, is working better than I expected it to, which is cool, but it makes my waste of material and, my eye puffiness even more annoying because I didn't even have to do it. But anyway, trying something
new.
There's
this artist, his name is Daniel Arsham, ARSHAM, and I think it's concrete, but he'll take like ordinary objects, like an old camera, and then make a mold and then fill that with concrete. But the voids within that mold are kind of on purpose, and it's part of the art. So he'll get this like camera concrete sculpture, and it's just missing like a huge chunk of it, and it looks cool.
Oh, I recognize that stuff. Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Well, it's something I'm, you know, just trying for the first time, and I definitely would like to do more.
Is it getting progressively harder and harder?
Actually, I haven't checked it this morning. I would hope so.
Epoxy the outside if it keeps wanting to chip away.
I think
just paint something on. Yeah.
I think with a resin, because I get this question a lot, with resin and even with cement and even plaster, if it begins to harden at all, it's going in the right direction of a chemical reaction. If it stays liquid, then that's when you got to start over. But if it begins to harden at all, it's moving in the right direction. It just needs more time. You would assume we could demold it in just an hour or two. Especially my friend did a tabletop, and he's like, it's still kind of tacky. I could put my fingernail in it. I go, when did you do it? He goes, I did it 2 days ago. I go, but how cold is your shop? He said, it's been like 50. I was like, no, it's going in the right direction. It's just a matter of temperature. So same thing with the concrete. It's probably too chilly for it to really lock in.
Yeah, it is, you know, in the 50s here. It has been the last couple of days, so.
So now I'm kind of wondering if that, while it's still trying to harden, if you like took a power washer or just a hose and you sprayed increase that awareness and give it like an effect. So before it completely hardens, you can give it that old worn out look.
Yeah. I don't want to mess with it. Because I can just see me like, yeah, I'm going to put the hose on it, and then the whole thing just dissolves in front of me or something. Like, no. Yeah, so we're leaving for spring break in a couple of weeks, and so I've got two kind of big sponsor engagements that I have to do this week and then one next week, and there's editing and stuff that has to happen with those. So basically, I'm just under the gun for the next 2 weeks trying to get these things done,
you just want things to go as planned.
Yeah. I mean, it would be nice if that...
Is that too much to ask for? I've kind of in a similar situation with the project that we're working on. Four videos I had to work on this month. And this last one, it's my second Squarespace video for the month. And I need an easy win. I'm going to make a set of coasters for the rental. And it's going to take a day. It's going to be an easy win. And it's going to be a really cool project. And it almost, after 8 hours, I almost ruined them. So there's a lake that the rental is on a channel canal that connects to like the local party lake. And I took the depth outline of that lake. And you know how, like, when you see water, you'll see there's an offset line inside, and then there's an offset line inside that to show like the depth of the lake. I took that, and each one of those was a different layer in these coasters. So the coasters are like a half inch thick, but there's six different layers, and each layer there was a cutout made by the scroll saw showing that depth. And then we were going to pour epoxy in there. And then during the glue up of the six layers, because we made all the veneers by hand from a big chunk of wood, took all day. And each layer has a bigger and bigger cutout. So I started gluing them the wrong way, where I was putting glue on the bigger pieces. And so when I put the smaller pieces on top, all that glue was showing up. And I didn't realize it until, and I'm making four of these, and I didn't realize it until like a few minutes in, the glue is already starting to set. I got glue everywhere where glue should not be. I had a total freak out. Like, I don't know what to do. I run in the house, and I know I need to wash them off. So I run in the house and I grab a pot. I bring it out to the shop, and I was just going to wash them off, and they didn't fit into the pot. And I run back in the house. I don't know what to do. And I'm like every minute counts at this point.
Yeah, because of the glue.
And I finally go back out into the shop. I grab them all. I take them inside the house, and then I just wash them all. I was able to get them all apart. And my thought was, don't just wash the glue side, you know, wash all sides because they're thin, they're going to get wet, and they're going to curl. So you want water everywhere so they don't potato chip too much. They still did. It was a whole mess. It's going to work out. It's just not as cool as I thought at first. And it was just supposed to be an easy win. And I'm in the video, I'm like, I think I'm cutting this out of the video because it's going to look so staged. But as I'm gluing up, I talk about how stressful glue-ups can be. And I'm like, I've done so many glue-ups. And every time I get stressed out because this is where things can go wrong. And then something went completely wrong. And I'm like, this seems so set up and staged. Mm. So I'm cutting that part of the video out where I talk about that because I don't want people to think it's fake because it's totally not fake.
AI.
Yeah. And I actually thought the epoxy part, when we pour that, is going to be that's where it can get ruined, not the glue stage. And so I was like mentally preparing for the other part to be the disaster. Anyway, things don't go as planned.
Is it a series of colored woods that progressively darken?
No. So it took a big chunk of maple and then resawed it into a bunch of thin pieces. And then basically they're getting glued back together, but I'm alternating the grain. So I'm making maple plywood, basically. And then I don't have the pieces here, but like that's an outline of one area of the lake. And then it gets progressively smaller or bigger with the different ones. And so that is all cut out on the scroll saw. And then they get layered up. And then the epoxy that we poured in there, we did it in multiple layers. So the bottom layers are the darkest blue and the top layers are the lightest to create that root. And the lake, it's a cool project. And I was so excited, but so devastated. But the lake is kind of long and it doesn't fit on a square coaster. So my thought was I make two coasters at the same time and then I split it down the middle. So when you separate the coasters, you can actually see from the side that.
That's cool. Is that what you're going to do?
Yeah. And that's what we're doing. Great. And the whole thing is, this is supposed to be a prototype for an art project that I'm going to do later this summer because we want to hang up on the wall like a big 4-foot version of this where you can see the depth of the lake. And so the coasters was supposed to be the easy project. This was supposed to be the prototype of this art piece. So,
well, I mean, it kind of is. Lessons. You learned some stuff not to do on the big one.
Yeah. Cool. I just want an easy win. I just wanted an easy win. A cool video that would take one day.
Yeah. Isn't that the thing, though? Like, when we need those, like, I just need something to... I need to get one done here, and that's when disaster hits. Almost every time for me, anyway. Jimmy, what about you? I bet everything's gone right for you this week, hasn't it, Jimmy?
Well, I drove to... Me and Rob drove to Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
We went to, I forget the name of the town, but it's just, it's about 150 miles away from Atlanta. So we drove, me and Rob left here right after the podcast last week. We left from here and we went to Baltimore. We hung out with Chris McCormick, who's one of our top patrons. Chris, thank you for a wonderful time. Chris was such an amazing host and his shop is unbelievable. It just goes on forever and he makes hatch exhibits. So Chris, thank you so much for such a wonderful tour. It is so inspiring. He has every machine. He's got 3D printers that you could print a car in. It's insane. It's unbelievable. So we spent the evening with Chris. He hosted us for dinner. We had a really nice conversation. And then the next morning we drove to Atlanta and we got to see Derek. Derek was carpooling with us. So it was Rob and I came from here, East Durham, and we met up with those guys at Hatch Industries. We met up with DTB and Derek. They came from New England. And together we then caravan down to Atlanta. And then in Atlanta, we hung out with Derek's daughter and son-in-law. And then the next day we went to a high school to go speak in their makerspace, a very, very exclusive private school with a beautiful makerspace, like a makerspace that would probably rival any big college Ivy League's makerspace. Insane. We spoke to the students. We had a really nice conversation with the students. I can't remember the name of the school. It might be called Westminster in Atlanta. I can't remember. It was a private school, so people who know would know what I'm talking about. And then, so that took us till Thursday. Yeah, that was Thursday afternoon. I can't remember. I think it was Friday. I can't remember the timing. We got to Chad's and then we left Atlanta. We got to Chad's, I think Friday afternoon. I can't remember. Yeah. Yeah, because we drove to Atlanta all day long on Thursday. So we got to Chad's Friday afternoon at about 2, and we had a nice time hanging out with everybody. It was actually quite a bit of fun, a lot of bonding. Got to see Evan and his dad Rob, and spent some time with those guys. Actually, Evan and I did a little collab video where he was my cameraman. He helped also with the build, but he was most of the camera work is by Evan. So I'm going to make a reel for Carolina sponsored reel out of that. We did a little build, and there was a wood thing going on and a metal build for an Argentine barbecue going on at the same time. There was about 50 people showed up, and Papa Chad put this on. Papa Chad, if you know him on Instagram, he put this on because we felt like Workbench Con was winding down last year, and that it felt like it might not happen, and it didn't. And he says, if Workbench Con doesn't happen, since we all get together in Atlanta, he's an hour and a half away, he said, I'll throw a party. And that's why. So he threw that party to the space holder of Workbench Con. And now it's going to be called Sparks and Sawdust. So we'll probably do it again next year. A lot of fun just hanging out. He's got a beautiful farm, lots of buildings, lots of ability to make anything. And just had a good time. And then we drove home Sunday afternoon, got back here Monday morning. And then I just got back into the groove. I have a video in the works of me making these scroll shelf brackets on the CNC machine, on the Onefinity. They look like cast iron. So anytime somebody walks in, I put most of them up already, but when anybody walks into the barn, I say, what do you think of my cast iron shelf brackets? And they go, wow, where'd you get so many cast iron shelf brackets? I go, they're plywood. Don't tell anybody. And it really does fool everybody. I actually, my friend came over yesterday. I didn't say, I go, oh, I just made all these shelf brackets. I didn't even try and fool him or anything. I just implied that I made them on the CNC machine. I didn't tell him at all. I just go, oh yeah, I just been making these shelf brackets. He goes, how are you able to cast so many of them? They're perfect. He goes, how are you casting these in the blacksmith shop? I go, oh, you think they're cast iron? He goes, what are they? I go, they're made out of plywood. So I totally fooled somebody.
Nice.
That was fun. So I'm working on that, and the tow truck's moving along. My patrons get to see the tow truck stuff. I got everything dismantled. And slowly I got my new pin from McMaster Car. I bought a 7 foot long, 1.5 inch steel rod out of 4140 hardened steel to be able to make pivot pin.
Did you
pin.
Say 7 feet long?
7 feet long. It was like $200 and something. But I got, it's to cut it pieces out of it.
Oh. So
I got to cut like, it into
wait,
like
four. Where's this going on the tow truck?
No, yeah, I cut it into four pieces. It's like various sizes. So I figured I'd buy just the stock.
Wow.
And yeah. That's it. Spring is here. I'm starting all the cars. Everything's running and driving. And I'll tell you guys something in the after show. I'll tell you in the after show. It's. I'm going to get reunited with something, and I'll talk about it in the after show. So you guys know.
Yeah.
I was going to keep it a secret because I keep blabbing about this, but it seems close. This time it seems
famous
close
last words.
Yeah. We'll see. But that's it. And then I don't know what video, if I have a video this weekend. I might skip this weekend. There's so much going on. So many trips coming up. It's crazy.
Did you...
No, it's weird. Go ahead.
Did you get to make your CNC video for the summit?
I did. I did a tips video, which is on my Patreon. This weekend is the summit. Or that's next weekend.
I think it's next weekend. I'm still finishing up my video.
I'm still a little confused about the way this is going to be laid out, but we'll see. We're doing Dave and I are both involved in a CNC summit with what's the name of the makerspace? We'll look it up.
Neither one of you know what you're doing.
There's so much going on all at the same time.
Yeah.
We'll look it up and we'll say it by the end of the episode.
There you go.
Funny. No, they probably don't listen to the show anyway. So. Well, I was going to say, it's weird, at least for me, this time of year. Usually the whole first quarter of the year is like low on sponsors, low on stuff to do, low, you know, it's it there's kind of a ramp up, which I actually really like about the spring. And then as it goes through the year, things tend to get, you know, there's just more going on. And then you get into holidays and there's sometimes a lot going on. But for some reason, the last month and the next 2 months for me is really busy, like great opportunities. You know, I'm not complaining about it at all. This is really cool, good stuff that I get to do in addition to the things that I already wanted to do. And it's adding up to just be a lot of work and in kind of a short amount of time. Like it's, you know, there's deadlines on them and they all kind of stack up after each other. So it's just different. It's surprising, but I'm not complaining because it will help for the rest with the rest of the year. You know what I mean?
So yeah, kind of the same boat. I'm curious, are you going to be able to enjoy your spring break?
I hope
mentally.
So. Yeah, I think so. I mean, because yeah. It's, you know, I've kind of committed to things that are, it's a lot of work before I leave, and then editing can happen while I'm gone. And then when I get back, I just get to start something new, which is still has a deadline and everything. But so, yeah, I mean, it's the break is placed in a, it's not placed. I worked around it to make sure that it was a break mm-hmm. because
yeah.
My oldest is going to college later this year. This is our last like full family spring break, you know, where wow. everybody's going to be done at the same time. And so we're trying to make the most of it and stuff. So I want my head to be there for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely worthwhile.
If I know you, I'm pretty sure your head is going to be there. You are going to detach and you are going to do everything you can to enjoy the family and the yeah, getaway.
I will do my best for sure. And it will help that a lot if I can get everything done beforehand. You know, if I get all of my stuff. And like yesterday, because I didn't know if this concrete thing was going to work out, I was already like, all right, what's my fallback plan? I got to design something else so that I have another thing that I can do in 2 days. And, you know, it was one of those. And then when the concrete kind of came out, I was like, oh, okay. I can set that idea aside and stick with my original plan and move forward at the pace I was expecting and stuff. So
yeah. When I had my little disaster, Kelly was home. She was in the bedroom and she heard me running in and out of the house and she heard all this noise. And then I was telling her later that day, like what happened. And I was like, we worked all day, you know, a good 7 hours to get to this point. And we're at the finish line and this disaster almost happens. And I was able to fix it. But the video actually would have been better if it completely failed and I didn't get to finish it. But my heart and my head would have not been mm-hmm. satisfied with that. But I think it would have helped the video if it was completely destroyed.
Yeah, I mean, there's something cool about that. If you have the time to pivot to something else, you know, like having that kind of
I think
disaster.
It's more than time. I think it's mentally the pivot, you know? It's just, yeah. This is what I was supposed to do today.
Yeah.
You sent the picture to the chat. It's very complicated. It's not just a series of simple layers. It gets progressively more complicated at the bottom. And I can imagine you had to keep referring to the image to get it right.
It's, I say in the video a couple of times, like, this is way too complicated for a set of coasters. Like, but I think part of me wants there to be a challenge with every little project, you know, cause it feels like a win if you succeed. And, I could have just cheated and cut everything out on a laser and layered it all up. But
cheated.
I wanted to do it. Cheated. I wanted to do it the hard way. I wanted to do it the way Grandpa Pachuta would on the scroll saw, cut every piece. Mm. And in actuality, the scroll saw work only took an hour. I just had everything ready, got my head down and cut everything out. I was expecting the blade to break because I'm not really good at the scroll saw, but everything that part all came out great. And when the scroll saw is one of those tools, it's like, if you're in the zone, you can, it's kind of hard to be mentally in the zone when you're filming and there's somebody else filming you, but it's one of those tools, like you can just kind of get lost in the work and really enjoy the process.
You got to be patient. It's the thing.
You got to be patient. Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't have a scroll saw, use your laser.
Yes. That's one of my favorite lines.
Yeah, that was
you don't
really
have
funny.
Tape, use your laser.
Yeah, I like Well, you said that in a recent video, and I paused the video and immediately texted you. Like, that was genius. Like,
yeah,
that was great.
Dave, I wanted to ask you about your recent video with the rails. What do you buy those CNC rails individually, like at length with the
the linear guide rails?
Yeah, where do you buy those?
Amazon.
Okay.
Vivor, is that the name of the company? Is that how you say it? Vivor? They sell they're some of the best priced ones. And you can get them in 16 millimeter thickness or 20 millimeter thickness. And, there's two different kinds. There's the kind that's just basically a steel dowel with connectors at the end with bearings that run. And then there's the kind, it's a steel dowel, but it also has this aluminum support underneath it. So it will not bend and it will stay perfectly straight. And I used a set of four of them to make the slab flattening thing, and it came out great. I've also used them for my table saw cross cut sled that I built into my table saw. And it's you see them and it's easy to understand what you do with them. And they're great for making machines. I want to make I don't know if I have the space for it, but I want to make a panel saw using them. But and then I had to figure out the whole like counterweight thing, I guess, with that too. But I don't know. Yeah,
I got one from Milwaukee that the TV show left, and we hardly use it, but once in a while it comes in handy. It's a bunch of stuff piled on it, but it has which you could probably find on Amazon, a big recoil spring. It's basically like an industrial size tape measure. And it's just this piece of steel tape that connects to it. And when you pull it down, you tension the spring and then it reels back up. So it's a big steel reel. I'll take a picture of it and send it. There's got to be something you can find on Amazon or McMaster.
Yeah.
So real quick, you said you got those from Vivor. So this is not they're not sponsoring this episode. Okay. They are sponsoring my video that I'm working on right now. And they sent me some of their tools and stuff to use in the video. And then they were like, if there's anything else that you really need from the website, just go, you know, let us know and we'll see if it works out. So I go to their website. I've seen the name all over the place because they, you know, there's lots of stuff that you can get from them. Have you ever actually gone to their website and looked at what they had available? It is bonkers. Like full on anything you can think of, you can buy from them. they sell hospital beds, like the electronic, you know, you stand next to it and hold a button and it rolls down the hallway and folds up in all the crazy ways. They have popcorn machines. They have camping equipment. They have underfloor heating. They have like just, I couldn't get through the website. I went through a couple of categories and I'm like, there's so much
there's
here. Basically anything you can think of, which is really interesting. I mean, they're a Chinese company, so I would assume that it's rebranding stuff that they're manufacturing for lots of different people. I don't really know how it works. But just all that to say, anything that you're looking for, you can go there and, I'm just looking on the website. You can buy a saxophone. They make violins, acoustic guitars, doors and windows, like bidets. It's everything. Anyway.
I just know them from the tools and stuff that they sell. And have you guys noticed like the cheap tools these days, like Harbor Freight, Vivor, whatever, they're actually really good compared to what they were just 10 years ago.
Like, yes.
So much better.
Yes. So I got, for this project, I asked them to send me a brushless circular saw and a jigsaw. And I don't have one of the jigsaws that's like where you hold the top of it. You know, I don't know what that style is called. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that'd be cool. I've never had one like that. And I famously don't like the jigsaw that much, but they sent me this one and I used it on the project and it feels like you're holding a jet. Like it's so powerful and you can completely kind of scroll with it. I was the same way. I was thoroughly impressed because I expected it to be just like, oh, I'm going to have to use this for the video. But I'm like, oh, cool. Now I have a new jigsaw. Mm-hmm. I like this one. And it's brushless, you know. It's got its own battery system, which is kind of a drag because I just have the same batteries for everything else. But yeah. Anyway. So we were talking we were talking offline last week about how we didn't talk about Banksy on the show, and I feel, kind of feel like we need to. So anybody that doesn't know Banksy, just world renowned, anonymous artist who's done tons of like street art and lots of different stuff, but everybody knows who Banksy is, I think. Well, nobody knows who Banksy is, but everybody knows who Banksy is.
Huh.
Recently, this news place kind of went further on a story that was done several years ago by somebody else, and they say that they've unmasked Banksy. And they say that he's this British dude, just like a dude. And so they put a name out there, and there's been no official response to it, so who knows if it's true or not. But it got us talking about how it's a shame that somebody in the news sphere decided that it was important enough to figure out who this person is rather than just let them make art anonymously.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real shame, but, you know, one for him, even if this is not him, just the idea that somebody has for a very long time trying to make art without being known for it, and has tried to have a normal life and an art life and keep those things separate and let them be, you know, and tried not to be famous and tried to make commentary on the world. And for some reason, people feel the need to try to figure out who it is. And that really irritates me because think of anybody else other than serial killers that you don't know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no anonymous philanthropists. I'm sure there are, but you don't know who they are. You've never heard of them donating money. There are no anonymous politicians. There are no anonymous musicians, really. And it's just a shame. And when they put this thing out and then people were like responding to it online, there were a bunch of people like me who were disappointed. Like, we didn't want to know who he is. He's Robin Hood, right? Like, we don't. Yeah. Anyway, you have any thoughts on this? I mean, you guys are both, I think, more in touch with art than I am. But you have any thoughts?
I felt right away when it came up, I'm like, he must have a contingency plan for this to happen, because he knows the water's always breaking in. You know, you always got to make sure that it's not going to break into the inner circle. You guys reminded me while we were talking this time, not in the beginning of the day, but I met somebody that did art fabrication for Banksy. And when I was out in LA doing Making It, Nick said, meet me in my friend's shop. And we got to talking and he goes, oh yeah, he's a very accomplished artist. I wish I knew his name off the top of my head, but he had some beautiful artwork around. He did bronze casting and several other things. And he goes, oh, I do art fabrication for a few people. And, I said, is that a real Banksy in the bathroom? He goes, yeah, it was a Banksy hanging on the bathroom wall. And I go, how'd you get it? He goes, oh, I've done work for him. I go, you know who Banksy is? He goes, yeah. I go, can you call him right now? He goes, yeah. Not gonna, but I can.
Wow.
So I was one step away from Banksy, and I can't honestly, he didn't actually tell me what he worked on for him, probably part of the secret. He goes, yeah, I've done art fabrication for him. He goes, and one of the things I did, I took payment in one of his paintings, which is hanging, well, it's a spray stencil of the girl with the flower. It's in this guy's bathroom in LA. Well, we visited his studio. It was beautiful, crazy, crazy artwork everywhere. It's a friend of Nick Offman's, but I think that he must have had a contingency plan. And this gentleman that's going around who they say is him, he's basically saying it's not him. It could be him. We have no idea because he's never going to confirm one way or another. And they're going to follow this guy for the next 10 years. And this guy's just going to be a regular laborer or whatever he's claiming to be. He's going to be a lineman or whatever. He's just going to play that act. And when he's at home at night undercover, he's going to be the artist. And in the light of day, no one's ever going to find this guy making anything because he has a contingency plan. He has a team doing stuff for him. And I think it's just genius that I'm sure he's thought this through.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked a little bit about AI, and Bob went online looking for clips of this gentleman who they claim is him. And the guy's out there begging for money, but it's somebody just did an AI clip. He's like, well, now that I've been outed, I can't make money as an artist, which is completely ridiculous to even as a premise. And this gentleman is out there, but it's an AI asking for money. There's no way that it could be real. He would never do that. He would never just say, give me money.
Yeah. Which is another whole conversation.
Because I've been revealed. It's
another whole conversation, you know, about AI and trust. But David, do you have any thoughts on Banksy before we get to the AI thing?
No, I don't have any unique takes except for the fact that it bothers me that everybody wants to be known, you know, with social media, and not everybody, but for the most part, people who make things want their name to be known. They want their face to be known. And then there's just this one person who doesn't want that. And the mystery is part of the art. The mystery is the art. And that has been robbed of somebody. So yeah, I didn't know about it until you sent the text, and I was like, oh, what? And then I Googled it then, and then I quickly kind of Googled it this morning to see if there was any news or updates. And so I don't really know much about it, except I am disappointed, and I don't really want to know that much more about it because the mystery is fun. You know,
yeah.
I don't really care for people's personal lives much, celebrities. And it's like I was scrolling through my Facebook feed yesterday, and I'm a huge White Stripes fan. I'm a huge Jack White fan. And I saw this post of like, this is the anniversary of Jack White and Meg White getting divorced. And I'm like, why is this a post? That was somebody's personal life.
Yeah.
That Jack White, same thing. He tried to hide that. He told the world that Jack and Meg were brother and sister. That was part of the story. That was part of the art of being the White Stripes. And then it came out that they were actually married, and now they're divorced and in a band. And I don't know why people have to ruin other people's fun.
Yeah. So in thinking about this, I'm a Banksy fan. Like, I saw a Banksy in San Francisco years ago in Chinatown. There's one where there's a doctor and he's holding up the stethoscope to the wall, and there's like a heart and a peace sign, I think. And it was the coolest thing about that was that it was on the side of a grocery store, I think, or some little building, and it had been covered with plastic sheet, like, big acrylic sheeting had been screwed to the brick over top of this thing to protect it. And that was the coolest thing to me, that somebody found street art important enough, probably the owner of that building, to try to protect it and preserve it for people like me who randomly walk down the street and look left and go, wait a minute, is that a Banksy? That was awesome, you know, and somebody took the time to do that. And I really respected that.
I've watched pretty much every documentary on him, the ones that he's made himself and the ones that were made by outsiders. And I would bet that artwork is no longer up because it happens a lot where they put the plexiglass over top of it to preserve it, but somebody will come along and they will come with a big saw and cut out the side of the wall, and then they turn it into something that they can sell.
Yeah, probably. But seeing that in person, and then like I think a year later was when through the gift shop came out, and so I saw that, and then it started me being interested in his work, and so I've shown it to my kids, and we have a book of his art and stuff like that. So I really like the art. I really like his commentary on things, and it's clever, and so I'm with you in that I don't want to know about his personal life. I want him to be able to have his personal life, but it does not have to intersect with the thing that I like about his artwork, you know? And so it's disappointing to me that people have gone to the effort to try to like make a connection. Like, who cares who he is? That's not the point. I mean, he intentionally has been hiding it. But it also got me thinking a little bit more about some other people. And I said earlier that there's no other anonymous people. And while you were talking, I caught myself on that. Chris Fix is a YouTuber who does car stuff, and he has taught millions of people how to work on their cars with a helmet on. I'm sure somebody knows what he looks like, and I'm sure somebody knows who he is, but he does a really good job of making a positive impact on the world in a very real world way. I mean, his videos are shown in classrooms, like, you know, he's having an impact on young people learning how to work on cars, and he's doing it anonymously. That's awesome. The Craftsman, another one, who is teaching people how to, this old Tony, there you go.
Yeah.
There are more that I'm not thinking of, right? So
yeah.
I'm glad to see that, and I'm glad to think about that. Nobody tried to out Chris Fix. Nobody tried to out this old Tony. Just let him be.
Yeah.
He outed himself, if you guys remember. He showed his face for a couple of frames when he hit 100,000 subscribers.
Oh, I didn't see that. Yeah. There's the AVE guy, too. He only shows his hands.
Hmm. There probably are a lot of those. But I think that's really cool, you know, and... To be perfectly honest, if I had thought of that, I probably would have tried to do that. Mm-hmm. Because I don't really like my face being on stuff. I don't need to be seen. You know, that's not a priority for me, but I didn't even think about it.
People within my inner circle say, you know, because our YouTube channels are waning a little bit and we're not getting the same views we got. And people are like, well, that's because you're not on camera enough. You don't show your face enough. And I'm like, I don't think that has anything to do with it.
Yeah.
You guys say that a little bit too. No, well, my people around me, they're like, you need to be on camera more. You need to speak on camera. I'm like, I don't. Every time I see my face, I'm like, why am I doing this? Just show the tools. Just show the work. That's all that matters. Mm. I don't know. I'm torn. When it's important to talk, I'll talk. I do talk.
Ahead, I do feel weird saying this out loud, but I actually enjoy the part of being on camera. I actually, like, I'm trying to get people to connect with what I do and not necessarily what I am making. And I think it just goes back to, like, I always wanted to be a rock star. You know, I played in bands and I wanted to be that guy. And thank goodness, because I don't think I would have handled it very well, but making videos on YouTube is kind of, you know, the 50-year-old version of me being that rock star. Hmm. And I enjoy it. I don't post much on, I'm very self-aware. I think, I'm not posting much on Instagram, and I haven't posted on Twitter in years, and my personal Facebook page. I'm not trying to say, hey, look at me. Hey, look at me. But I sort of am when I am posting YouTube videos, but yeah, I feel guilty for enjoying it, but I enjoy it a little bit.
I don't think you should feel guilty for that. And please don't hear me saying that, you know, like I'm not wanting to be on camera has anything to do with anybody else. No, I think there's absolutely a place for all of it, right? For being hands only, for being like the person that's a good presenter, for like, we need all of it. And that's why we're different. That's why there's so many of us, right? To be all the different things. So I don't think that's something you should feel weird about at all. But it also, being on camera, not being on camera, doing work as a young person, as an older person, whatever, it kind of got us talking about AI earlier. And then seeing that video of the guy that was AI. And it was a really good video of, I mean, it wasn't a good video, but it was a good AI video of a person talking that looked very real. And so lately I've been thinking a lot about this just because there's just so much. It was easy to brush off the AI generated video and images and stuff when everything looked like a cartoon and when everything was like, you know, people have 25 fingers and it was easy. And then very, very quickly, it got not easy to tell what was real and what was not real.
Imagine in a couple of years. Imagine in 6 months. It's unbelievable.
I think we're already there. I think we're already at a point. And this is not being old man cynical. I'm not trying to be. I think we're already at a point where I don't truly feel like I can trust anything on a screen.
100%.
100%. And so I'm thinking about this. You know, all of us have the history of, like, I don't know, I'm not sure exactly how to say it. We have the history of skepticism to where we can look at something and, like, trust, well, that's probably real. That's not real, whatever. My kids are now being exposed. They are growing up in not in a, in a world that is, there is no way to tell if something is real or not. And this is especially true when it comes to other humans who they recognize saying things. That's where I think this is just really scary and dangerous. And I think there's maybe a whole conversation about how bad it is for all of us to not be able to trust the world around us. But in regard to us doing YouTube stuff, what is our place going forward?
I personally think that our place is even more important now. Anybody who creates, I think, is makes it even more special. If you make something with your hands or your brain, that's even more special than a computer taking an average amount of the entire world and making something. And I think people are going to recognize that. People are going to see enough of this AI slop all over the place, and they're going to be drawn to people who actually make something. I have no plans to ever listen to an AI album. I hope my mind doesn't change on that, but if I heard a song and it was really good, and then you told me it was AI, it just took away the magic for me. Because to me, creative things, art, furniture, physical things that were made by your brain and your eyes, there's a little bit of magic to that, and that's what I'm drawn to. And when you take that magic away, I'm not interested in it anymore. And I think people are just going to want to see real things made by real people. I think
that definitely feels like the trend, but that's also now the goal for AI. That obviously the next goal is to mimic everything that looks exactly the same as something we expect, but also to mimic the emotional connection. It's coming, the emotional connection, partly there, you know, to mimic that, to AI the emotional connection, and then they will have completely accomplished the goal. I don't know how we're going to be able to get around it eventually.
Well, maybe it makes us more creative. Sorry, Bob.
No, it's okay.
But maybe the people who create can respond to this just by outdoing AI and just making something that AI wouldn't make, right? Maybe it forces us to be more creative and more into the problem solving part. I don't know.
So I would agree with that in general. Again, the old man crotchety pessimism, it like tries to get in here, because when I look at, you know, today's problem is, and the thing that we're talking about is AI. 2 years ago, the problem was the beastification of YouTube, where all of us were trying to, people who made things by themselves or made things that were trying to put into the world, were up against this massive, hugely funded, in my opinion, kind of lowbrow entertainment that's just like, how long can you hold your pee while touching this statue until, you know, it's like, and that stuff is huge and gigantic, and it still is. And
that's my next
just
video.
Millions and millions of people spend their time watching that kind of stuff. Whatever. No judgment call on those people. It's in contrast to what we do. Okay. So then I think if you swap out Mr. Beast and that content with an AI generated version of what we do, I don't think the AI stuff has to be better than us for them to watch it. I think they're going to watch it because it's there. And so it's like us trying to outcompete something. I think this is just the case. This is just how it is, in my opinion, moving forward with all things. We're not competing with Mr. Beast. We're not competing with AI. We can't outdo them, because the appetite for what we do is different from the appetite for what those things are creating. And it's, it's parallel creation, right? And it's parallel viewership. But I do think that the mass is always the mass of people, the majority of views is always going to be on the low hanging, quick, uninvested viewership, in my opinion. And I think that's bad for us long term, but it also helps kind of narrow down who it is we're talking to and who it is we're trying to reach, which is going to probably lower our numbers and our views. But at the same time, it's also kind of like a purification of the audience. It's people who actually want to see what people do. And so it sounds like I'm being really negative and saying that most of the people are going to continue to watch garbage. And that's probably true. But I don't think it's really good that people will begin to identify, do I want to watch whatever's available or do I want to watch humans do a thing? And so hopefully, as we continue to try to be creative and do things with our hands, there will be people who just want to see that. They don't care about furniture. They don't care about 3D printing or whatever. They want to see humans making stuff. And that will be our audience, I hope. I think the same applies for like music. You were talking about albums. I think there is... Pop music is pop music. It's always been pop music, whether it's made by a producer and then handed to a singer to record into a microphone, or if it's made by an AI and immediately put out, that's pop music. That's the same thing. And so I think that my opinion has always been, I would rather watch a person write their own songs, perform their own songs, than hear something that was written by, an executive and then passed down to a person and recorded by a famous person. So I think that same thing is in play. I kind of just hope that enough people continue to create things with their hands and don't give up in the face of, I'm up against a tidal wave of AI creation stuff that I can't possibly compete with because I think we don't have to compete. Okay, I'm done. Sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. Thoughts.
I also feel bad. The stuff that I make is not being reproduced by AI, but there's other things like artists who create prints or paintings and stuff, and that is directly stolen by AI. Yeah. So I can't understand that type of pain, and I feel bad for them. But I remember like 5 years ago, short form video was like the new thing. Instagram changed their format to be more short form video forward. TikTok came along, YouTube Shorts came along, and it felt like, as a long form YouTuber, do I need to make short form content? Because that's where the eyeballs are. And then all of a sudden, my most watched device is now the TV. It used to be the phone. You can go in your YouTube analytics and you can see how people are watching your videos. That means people are taking the time to watch my videos in the way that I want them to be watched, not on a phone, but on a bigger screen. And I think that was part of the reaction of people choosing to see what they want. It's more intentional instead of like, TikTok just gives you what TikTok thinks it should give you. And you just get lost in that. And I think the AI is going to have the same thing. People are going to be, it's new. It feels crazy. This technology is just absolutely amazing. And the newness of it, people are interested in it. I think there's a whole social media platform that's only AI generated video. I have no plans on
really
downloading. Yeah. I have no plans on downloading that app. I have no plans on.
So crazy.
Yeah.
And, it's AI slop.
I think our place is even more important. And I don't think it's going to hurt us that much because I think people are going to want to see the human side of things.
I'm going to take the point counterpoint. The good parts of AI are, for instance, I did that tile of the tombstone and I was having trouble getting the contrast. So I put it in AI. I said, AI, clean this image up. And boom, I got an image that I was able to use. A quick logo when
that's
a friend
tool.
Says, hey,
that's not entertainment. That's a tool.
Yes.
Yeah. Agree. No, so I'm saying that's the good side of AI. I'm sorry. I have to keep coughing. You know, when a friend says make a logo, and I'm like, you don't want to tell him you could just make a logo in AI. So you just go to AI. You're like, make a logo for so-and-so heating and cooling. And then it spits out a logo. And they're like, oh my God, it's amazing. You did that so fast. I'm like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. So like to be able to utilize AI for logo design. And I said it before to somebody recently. AI will spit out a logo in my style, but it'll add 50 things that I would never have even thought of, but I love. And that's a good tool. And you can go in there and then you could adjust it, really fine tune it. You bring it into Illustrator and fine tune.
As a brainstorming tool, it's great. As an organization tool, it's great. Yeah. As content creation, I'm just disgusted by it.
Yeah.
I think.
Go ahead, Dave. Bob, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, yeah, I mean, I can't say I'm disgusted by it, but I think when it's intent, when someone uses the tool and the intent is replace the human part of it, I think that's different. That's different than, you know, help me solve this programming problem that I don't know how to solve, or I've written by hand this programming stuff 100 times and it takes a day every time. Do it again for me so that I can move on to the hard thing or the complex thing or the interesting thing. Those are very different than like, I'm going to completely generate something from scratch and try to pass it off as a human did it, or a human said this and it affects their livelihood, or, you know, stuff like that. I think that's the deception issue.
The trick.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing that I worry about. Then again, the counter of that is that I think it can help. It probably, hopefully, will help build, at least in my kids' generation, a healthy distrust, which sounds weird, but we need to have a level of skepticism about the things that we hear, whether that's on the news or on the internet or a video that we see or on a social platform. There needs to be a healthy skepticism so that we are willing to go the next step and see, like, to ask questions and to ask for sources and, you know. And so I think that there's so much of this generation happening now that it's going to get to a tipping point where people begin to feel like I feel, where I cannot trust anything that I see on a screen.
Yeah, wait till Donald Trump does.
So that, and now I have to ask questions. I'm not saying that I'm never going to trust anything ever again, but it should be the catalyst for me going a step further to verify things and to like actually think about what I'm
saying. Wait till the world leaders pass away. We're not going to know for weeks. Because they're just going to...
That's very true. Yeah.
They're just going to prop up AI until they could figure out what the contingency plan is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I use Donald Trump as an example, but that goes for anybody that's a major world leader.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, the other cool thing about it, though, is that it, I think, is probably going to reinforce, okay, if I can't trust the things that I see on screens, what can I trust? I can trust people that I know. I can trust face-to-face interactions. And so, Jimmy, that whole thing that you did, that trip to see those students in a classroom, trustable. You seeing your friends outside cutting wood and hammering things and making stuff together, trustable. Mm-hmm. Personal relationships. And so, like, over the last few years, everybody has gotten on their phones and we've started to disconnect so much more because we think we're connected virtually. Now that little disconnection is a point of distrust. So how do we fix that? We get back together. So that's my hope, is that, if we can't trust the little rectangle, then like put the rectangle down and turn towards somebody and start like, you know, yeah, I know it's crazy. So I don't know. I'm not expecting to solve anything, but I just have been thinking so much about this lately because I'm seeing it and how it's affecting me. And I know my kids are coming up in this and they're about to like start going off to college where they're not going to have me over their shoulder going, that thing is fake. That thing is real. Don't trust that. You know, they're not going to have that. And they're going to have to start figuring this stuff out on their own. And that's scary, you know, just because they're my kids and I love them. But there are lots of people who are going to go through a lot of the same stuff. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't really have any other thoughts on it.
it just worries me.
Yeah. You said it right. We're not going to solve anything in this podcast, but it is like the reason I wanted to talk about it is because you've been thinking about it. We all have been thinking about it and it's just on the forefront of our minds. But I'm just going to be the guy who says this is going to help people who are creative because it's just going to reinforce what we do. And I'm going to use it to make me better. I'm going to out create the AI somehow. Hmm. I don't know how, but that's my attitude.
Well, it's funny. I have unconsciously tried a couple of steps. I've been unconsciously implementing a few things to prove, if for no other reason, just so I don't get accused of using AI, which sometimes I do, and I'm not ashamed of it. But for instance, in my latest video where I make the shelf bracket, I've clip arted stuff in the past and people accuse me. So I found this time, I'm like, I don't want to get accused of clip arting an image. So this time, let me hand draw it. So I opened up my iPad and I hand drew an image of a shelf bracket based on an antique that I found on eBay. So I saw the image on eBay, which I'll include in the video. And I was like, that's the influence. And so I hand drew what I thought I was looking at. And it's not an exact perfect replica because I got some of the scale different and some of the thicknesses and everything's a little different. But I animated the sketch, which I posted on Instagram a couple of days ago as a story, but it'll be in the video. So I hand draw, then I take that drawing and then I use that as my vector lines to cut the thing out. So just to show how it is from my hand. But in a way, like AI, I am inspired by what I've seen. And I found an image I liked. It's like, that's exactly what I would like if I saw it in a store, I'd buy that. It's like, let me make my own version of that. So, so I don't know. I don't know what's right or what's wrong anymore. I just know I needed a shelf bracket, that's all.
Yeah. I mean, right? And it's naive to say that there's any sort of blanket statement about things being right and wrong when it comes to this stuff. Because, I mean, I don't know. It's just like guns, I guess. It's intent. Like, what is your intent to use the tool in a way that you expect?
Yeah.
You know, if your intent is to try to make somebody think something's true that's not true, that's bad intent. If your intent is to help you do something quicker, faster, so that you can do more, you can do different, whatever. So I'm not, please don't hear me like poo-pooing on all of it and saying it's all bad. But I do think it's something that individually everybody's going to have to start figuring out how it fits into their life and whether they want it to be both the use of and the reaction to, right? Because you can decide just not to use it. That's one decision. But you still have to figure out how to react to it because it's a part of our world now and it's going to be used around you. So, just something to think about, I guess. Thoughts? Anything else?
I feel better.
I think just a healthy level of skepticism for everything you see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, from now until the end of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always going to be the case anyway, even if AI wasn't the thing, you know.
And then also, just one more thing with the AI, with the scams of, you know, we've all put ourselves online. We could all be replicated. There could be complete AI fake people of us to be able to call somebody, make a fake thing. So we need to have a safe word with us and our audience. So you guys want to make a safe word with our audience right now?
Rhubarb.
Rhubarb.
Of course. All they have to do is, I mean, this podcast is online, so the AI can find it, and now
we'll come up with an alternate to rhubarb in the after show. This way, that's our safe word with the audience.
Actually, I guess what we usually have to do is be like, how would you do that? There's got to be a way to trick the AI. I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out. Totally.
No, but with the family, with your family, with your inner family, definitely have safe words and stuff. My family has a safe word.
Yeah.
Because people could mimic any one of us. Yeah. There was a time once a friend of mine joked, this is 10 years ago. My buddy called me and he goes, I'm in a really bad jam. I need 10 grand. And I immediately went, all right. I go, I could take an advance on a credit card. I go, would you get arrested? And he goes, you passed the test. I go, what test? He goes, I just wanted to see what you would say if I told you I needed 10 grand in an emergency and you immediately said I could take a credit card advance. So I passed the test.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, cool. I guess he could trust me.
Never answering that guy's text again.
Exactly. But the point I'm bringing that up is that could happen and somebody could really need 10 grand or 5 grand or even $20. And then you realize it's not somebody it's somebody that was pretending to be somebody you knew. So be careful.
Yeah. Well, my grandpa was around a few years ago. He got a call from David Picciuto saying, hey, I'm in trouble. I forget what the amount was, $1,000, $2,000. And he was getting ready to go to the bank. And luckily he called me and to confirm. And, but he almost got tricked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's wild. I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters because they're real. I'm positive every single one of them is not an AI. So I'm grateful that they are grateful they're here and they support the show. big thanks to everybody over there at every level, but especially our top supporters. That's Works by Solo, Tinius Space Industries, The New Janky Workshop, Scott, a Daddy Yourself DIY, Rich at Low End Design, Pete Rondo, Odin Leather Goods, Nick Ryan, Master of None, Jim Sammons, Chris McCormick, Chad for Mancrafting, Albers Woodworks, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. But also Papa Chad, he's on that list, and he had a bunch of people for real world non-AI interaction this last week. And I think that's awesome. Good on you. If you want to get the after show where Jimmy's going to tell us about his secret thing that he's not telling us about right now, you can go to patreon.com/makingit and sign up at any level. Everybody gets the after show no matter what level you're supporting at. So we really appreciate it. Seriously, like people listening and people supporting the show to help it continue on and you know, give us incentive to keep doing this. Really grateful for that. So go check it out if you're interested. And if not, just glad you're here. Thanks for listening. I don't have anything to recommend this week because I really have not been watching anything. Do you have two, David?
I've got two for you then. Sweet. Okay. You mentioned Jim Sammons as one of our top Patreon supporters. I was recently on his podcast. He's a fantastic host, by the way.
Oh.
But I got two picks, and one of them Jim put in my Discord, and it's this artist named Gawk, G-W-A-K Productions. And he's in this video that I'm sharing, he made a computer speaker that it's the iconic computer speaker from like 15 years ago. It's so good. I didn't know about this channel, and I couldn't believe I didn't know about this channel.
I've seen that. That's amazing. He made that big fake computer speaker. It's so cool.
There's basically three channels right now that are so good, and they just need so much more attention because they make such amazing stuff. And one is Gawk Productions. That's my pick. The other one is Synodrome. I've talked about before. So freaking good.
Yeah.
And then really John good. Lehman Studios is just, all three of those channels just need to be so much bigger because the content they are making is so inspiring. So, sorry. And then my second pick is this dude, he made this bronze octopus and it's absolutely amazing. The channel's called you know what? I'm not even going to pronounce it. I'm just going to put the list in here. This video only has 1,000 views. It needs so much more because this dude is an artist and he's so good. And
if you go to search for it, search for Interwoven. That's the title, the name in there, since you don't want to say the channel name.
There you go. Anyway, these two picks are so good. Go check them out. Amazing creators.
Awesome.
Dave, I know you're a big fan of comedy. Have you been following Chris Fleming?
No.
You got to watch him. He's so funny. You know, it's very rare that a comedian comes out and he's just so unusual, but so funny. Everything he says, Rachel's his biggest fan. Like, she finds and sends me all of his memes. Look up Chris Fleming. He's kind of popping right now because he's got a new Netflix special. He is so funny. You got to check him out in such a weird, unusual way. And he makes the most subtle, unusual things extremely hilarious. So check out Chris Fleming. I might have said Scott. Chris Fleming. I'm looking at one of his clips right now. But wherever you find him, it's an HBO special. Yeah. Oh, HBO. Yeah. He's so funny. He's going to be a huge star. He's so unusual. We started following him on Instagram, and then he's popping right now. Such a weirdo in a good way.
Those are my people.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, he's such a weirdo. I'm telling you, watch him later and tell me what you think. He's so funny.
Okay. Awesome.
That's it.
Well, yeah, I think that's it. Unless you guys got anything else for this week.
That's it. Oh, by the way, it's I sent it to the chat for the CNC symposium. It's Benchmark. And maybe we could put a link in the show notes. I put a link
for saving us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
It's Benchmark Fine Woodworking. That's they're hosting it. They're in Jersey. It's a big maker space. And they bought, do you guys remember I made that walnut bench out of a tree a couple of years ago? I sliced the tree in half and split it open on steel brackets and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That bench is at Benchmark Makerspace in South Jersey.
Oh, cool. And the website is cncsummit2026.com.
That's
where you can sign up and watch Jimmy and I and a bunch of other people who are CNC experts. Those people are probably real CNC experts. I'm just feeling my way through it.
I think that's probably all of us are. We're all good at our own like little window of stuff, and together we'll make up a good thing.
The overused phrase is the best way to learn something is to teach it, because you do all the research and you try to get all your facts straight. So
that is true. Cool. Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you. Later. Love you.